Fans, great to have you back with us as we get ready for Game 3 of Giants Baseball. We're joined this morning by an author, Bill Staples Jr. Let me tell you a little bit about him because his subject matter is fascinating. I think you're going to enjoy hearing from Bill. He's a member of the Society for American Baseball Research, of course, SABR. He's a board member of the NISAE Baseball Research Project and a past speaker at the Cooperstown Symposium on Baseball and American Culture at the National Baseball Hall of Fame. He lives in Chandler, Arizona, and he's got a website, Zenimura, Zenimura.com. Bill, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm fine, Marty. Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
We're glad to have you here. And the book that you put out, it's put out by McFarland. And, of course, we support our local bookstore, the Book Tree up in Montclair, and David can get it for you. But the name of the book is Kenichi Zenimura, Japanese-American Baseball Pioneer. And his story really is an amazing story. The threads of Japanese-American baseball, Japanese baseball, World War II, things that happened afterwards. This is an amazing story. Tell me what drew you to Kenichi Zenimura.
I'd love to. Thanks for giving me a chance to tell his story. Well, let me just give you a little background of why the story was so fascinating to me. So I'm a baseball fan, loved the game ever since age 10. Bit of a baseball historian, thought I knew a lot about the game. I even studied Negro League history, but I'm also a youth coach as well. And so I moved to Chandler, Arizona back in 2004. And it's right next on the border of the Gila River Indian community. And I think it's really important to volunteer and support and be involved in the community. So I reached out, or actually did a Google search, about becoming a coach at Gila River. So I did a Google search for Gila River in baseball. Didn't find anything about coaching opportunities, but I saw this fascinating old wooden home plate. It had a small, like, little twig of grass growing out of it. And it said, Zenimura's home plate, 1943. Gila River Internment Center, and it was part of an exhibit called Baseball is America, which was traveling around the U.S. at that time. So, again, I thought I knew a lot about baseball, but I didn't know anything about Japanese-American baseball, let alone Zenimura. So the story, just him as an individual, fascinated me because I had read about him after that he's about 5'1", 115 pounds wet on a good day. And I'm actually a former football player who played they describe me as diminutive, undersized defensive tackle from Texas at 5'9", 180 pounds. But I held my own, and I actually had a lot of admiration for smaller athletes. So in a way, I kind of saw my athletic background in his story, at least on the field. But as a human being, and his story was just fascinating to me, because of where we were at that time. If you remember back in 2004, we're just a few years away from September 11th. And our country was still recovering, if you will. We were in a different mindset. I'm a bit of a wisdom seeker. I wanted to see what lessons could be learned that could still be applied in today's society. So for me, just philosophically, I wanted to know, how does one find happiness and freedom in a world that's less happy and free? And I felt that Kenichi Zenimura had those answers.
Yes, great beginning, and it explains why you were drawn to him. But the home plate, the wooden home plate with a little sprig of grass growing through, saying Zenimura's home plate. Who was he pre-war? What happened to him during the wartime experience that you just described? And what was life like for him? And, you know, what makes him the Japanese-American baseball pioneer?
Well, again, just let me share with you, I think I'm very fortunate that the story found me in terms of the place and time where we were at. In addition to the time period that we're in, also think about technology and how things are changing and things are becoming more digitized and accessible. And I quickly learned that Zenimura's life story was well documented. And it was just sitting there waiting for somebody to put all the pieces together. So I dove in, and starting with a resource like Ancestry.com, I was able to discover his life story when he arrived. He was born in Japan in 1900 and arrived in the U.S. in 1907. Actually, he arrived in Hawaii. His parents moved there, and so he's a young man. And Hawaii in the early 1900s was a multicultural baseball hotbed. You had Portuguese teams, Hawaiian, Japanese, Chinese, even African Americans. You had military bases there. The 25th Infantry, great players like Bullet Joe Rogan and some others played there. So Zenimira grew up watching them play. So not only did he get exposed to baseball as a young age, but he was exposed to different types of people from different backgrounds, and it really opened up his mind and made him, I think, a man of the world.
What kind of player was Zenimura?
So in high school, he started off as second base, catcher, pitcher. He also played middle infield, shortstop as well. Great speed, could steal bases, very quick. Switch hitter, so hit from both sides. And from what I can tell, he didn't have a lot of power. I only found one home run in all the box scores. But I talked to his son, who was born in 1927, and he said most likely he was an inside the parker because he was so fast. But when he went to Japan, he just impressed everybody there. They thought he was a professional back in the U.S., and so at times he was banned from playing because they wouldn't allow professionals to play with amateurs.
Let me ask you this, Bill, because I want the story to be told here. What did he do that made him the American baseball pioneer? Because we know he played in Hawaii. We know that he went back to Japan. But he does have an impact on the mainland. And what is that impact?
So Sharon Robinson, Jackie's daughter, she knows the story. She actually wrote a very nice foreword to Kirio Nakagawa's educational guide around Japanese-American baseball. And in that, she says, there are numerous parallels between my father's story and that of Japanese Americans. And I think about Zenimura and Jackie Robinson. And then another quote is Bob Costas. He says, Jackie wasn't the first. There were others before him. He wasn't the best. Others put up greater numbers. But can you think of anyone more important? And that's the same with Zenimura. Let me explain why there's nobody more important than him. He wasn't the first. Actually, the very first players from Japan to play were in 1872 here in the U.S. So, and then teams started in the early 1900s. There were others who were bigger and stronger and put up better numbers than him. But where I think he's most important is his work as an international ambassador. So he was involved in, I think, over 17 tours between the U.S. and Japan. And we call that building baseball's bridge between the U.S. and Japan. And you think about all the tours back and forth, Caucasian teams, Negro League teams, and then the Japanese Americans. There was always a Japanese American behind the scene who knew the language and the culture and the customs to help facilitate those tours. And so when Zenimura wasn't on the three tours himself in 1924, 1927, and 1937, he was very active behind the scenes, sending letters, organizing, and helping other teams make those tours.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah, so we think we found documented evidence, letters of him writing on behalf of Babe Ruth in 1927, laying that foundation for the 1934 tour. Mm. So they have those letters over in the archives in Japan. And we know he was instrumental in his relationship with the Negro League teams in California, getting the Philadelphia Royal Giants to go in 1927 as well.
Boy, that explains that. All right, you answered the question beautifully. The book is, wait till you hear more of this story, but Kenichi Zenimura, Zenimura, the Japanese-American baseball pioneer, and Bill Staples Jr. has explained it. And Bill, let's get to World War II, and you referred to the internment camps where the Japanese-Americans were sent during World War II. But baseball becomes a big part of the camp, and he's a big part of it. And just when I look back on the story and listen to it, it's incredible to me how baseball was organized by someone like Zenimura and what it meant to the people there. So give us a little bit on that.
So Zenny was an architect, not just of baseball fields, but of leagues as well. So he had built his first field in 1925. In Fresno, California, and it was called the Fresno Japanese Ballpark, but it was used by all types of teams and leagues there in California. Then in 1942, that's when the mass incarceration began. And by the way, I think it's very important to point out that the Associated Press has just announced this week that they are making the official transformation from the term internment to incarceration. So the Japanese American community and groups like the Japanese American Citizens League have been very mindful and trying to advocate that people use the proper language when speaking about this. Internment is really putting foreign enemies in prison, whereas incarceration is what happened to the Japanese Americans, because at least two-thirds of them were U.S. citizens.
So here he is. They're incarcerated, and Zenimura makes baseball happen. And this is part of the heart of the story. Now that we know his background and all the things he did prior to the 1942, look what happens within the camp, within the concentration camp, where they're incarcerated. So give us something on that, because I think it's an important part of who he really became post, post camp.
Sure. So after February 19th, 1942, that's when Executive Order 9066 was signed. Over 120,000 Japanese Americans and people of Japanese ancestry were sent to camps across the U.S., and 10 of those were peppered throughout the Southwest and parts of Louisiana and California. So Zenimura and his family arrived at the, it was called Rivers, Arizona, but it was on the Gila River Indian community. His family actually should have gone to Arkansas, but his wife had asthma, and so they came to Arizona for a medical exemption. So, which is really fascinating when you think about how I live right next door to Arizona. I may not have never heard of him had they gone to Arkansas. But so he was a next door neighbor, but 60 years ago. And when he arrived, he had this passion for baseball, but actually he was depressed. He spent about 2 weeks kind of kicking around the camp, figuring out what he was going to do. And, you know, he looked out into the barren desert night, and he saw this big open field just outside of the barbed wire. And so he decided then and there with his sons that he was going to build his third and final field.
Amazing.
So I believe it took them several weeks to get the field completed. He was able to negotiate with some of the camp officials to somebody to get a tractor to level off the ground. The fire crews, when they were doing the water testing, he just said, "Hey, can you come over here and water our fields and, you know, help flatten it out?" But the community really came together, and they built this wonderful, as they say, diamond in the desert. It had a backstop. It had sunken-in dugouts. It was probably one of the nicer fields in Arizona at that time, definitely in the camps as well.
Why, beautiful. What an image that you've created in the camp, and all of a sudden the beautiful baseball field, the field of dreams, so to speak, comes out of nowhere. So they have the games in the camp. They make uniforms, and it's very creative how they do that. And now World War II ends, and, of course, he has an impact after World War II. Give us something on that as well.
Sure. I know we just kind of glossed over the camp experience, but I did want to point out that Zenimura was very creative in the way that he had the field built and constructing the teams and even the uniforms. So he had relationships with sporting goods owners back in Fresno, California. He was placing orders, but he was also raising money there at the ballpark itself. People would pay money to watch these games. The other thing that I think is really interesting is that Zenimura also invited the outside semi-pro teams to come in and play. So Negro League teams came in, the top white semi-pro teams came in. And Zenimura always made sure that the visiting team, win or lose, would get 60% of the gate receipts. So they left well compensated as well. It's really fascinating to see how clever he was, and just, you know, really resourceful in having that all come together. So I just wanted to show that.
Sure. No, absolutely. That is what the book is on. That's the heart of the book.
Yeah.
Of Kenichi Zenimura, Z-E-N-I-M-U-R-A. Bill Staples is the author, obviously knows his subject matter really well. Well, let me ask you this. A lot of people are going to want this book and want to read it. What would you recommend? What is the issue that you'd like people to remember when they think of the name Kenichi Zenimura?
Well, I think when we talked about the legacy of Japanese Americans and Japanese American baseball, it's really that bridge across the Pacific that was built. And it wasn't just to Japan. They went to China, they went to Korea, and even to some extent the Philippines as well, opening that up. So when we look at how internationalized the game has become today, I really feel that Zenimura and other Japanese Americans deserve more recognition and credit for that, and they should be celebrated. Don't get me wrong. I love the Negro Leagues, and I love the legacy and the rich history around that, and it's been well celebrated. But if a small percentage of that attention could go to the Japanese American story, that would be wonderful. In some ways that we're trying to get that done, we're reaching out to Major League Baseball. So, for example, this is the 150th anniversary of U.S.-Japan baseball relations. We've suggested that perhaps they wear a patch on their arm for one day or a weekend or a week. So that's kind of in the works. We've talked with them around that. A civil rights game, just like they do for the Negro League teams in the South. Why not have a civil rights game on the West Coast to recognize and identify what occurred during World War II? Then, you know, other institutions like the Baseball Hall of Fame. It's great that they have the home plate, but we believe that Zenimura is a candidate for what used to be called the Early Baseball Era Committee. I think now it's called the Classic Baseball Era Committee. We've nominated him in the past, and unfortunately, he's not eligible. So just as Japanese Americans were excluded during 1900 to the 1940s, believe it or not, they're still excluded today. The officials who have set up the guidelines and the rules for recognizing historic baseball accomplishments, they won't consider Japanese Americans at this time. So it's great that we've made a lot of strides, but there's still a lot of opportunities for improvement.
Well, the book is a good beginning. I'll tell you that for people that need to know the story. Kenichi Zenimura. Bill Staples is the author. Bill, thank you so much for being on and sharing the story and your personal thoughts about it. Very informative for everybody, and I'm sure everyone appreciates the passion that you have for the subject. So I appreciate you being on, and we'll look forward to having you on again and tell more of the story and update on the things you just talked about. So, Bill, thank you.
All right, thank you. Take care.
No, but good. That's Bill Staples, Jr. The book is out by McFarland, Kenichi Zenimura, and it is quite a story. Quite a story. All right, more coming up, KMBR 680, 104.5, the sports leader.